Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, creators of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Locke.
Welcome to Serotalk. Podcast 44 for June 21th, 2010. This is Michael Loff.
I'm Ricky Inger, welcoming you to June 21th, iOS 4 Day.
Coming up this Thursday is Tech Chat 64, where we will be talking about differences and enhancements to Microsoft's new Office 2010. I'm liking it very much, using Word and Outlook and getting up to speed on Excel and PowerPoint. Good news, bad news for you folks. One thing that annoyed me a lot was that to get Outlook, you have to buy the professional version of Office, which retails for $299, and oh, you can get it for maybe $250 and maybe even as low as $225. But I found a solution I think is even better, and Steve Nutt pointed out that it is not for everyone because you cannot use this in a work environment. What I'm talking about is a new service, Microsoft TechNet Standard. And what this gives you for the price of $199 per year, and then optionally if you want to renew every year, it's $149. But before you dismiss it, that sounds like a lot of money, but here's what you get. 10 product keys. Each of those 10 licenses has 10 activations, technically allowing you to activate 100 machines. I'm talking all versions of Office, at least the last three, I think four actually, Office XP through 2010. We're talking Windows XP, Windows Vista, and yes, even Windows 7. There's also a lot of TechNet articles. Maybe you want to do some teaching or training or what have you. So you'll want to read the terms of service. It does allow you to install it on home machines. Obviously, the limitation is you cannot put this in what they call a live environment or at the workplace. You couldn't go to your supervisor and go, hey, I can save you money. We can get 10 licenses for every computer in the office. You cannot use it in that capacity. But for individual use or testing purposes, you build computers or you're just software testing, whatever, you're not going to beat the price. So for $199 plus your state sales tax, in my case, 7%, putting it right at around $213, you're not going to beat it. It absolutely positively rocks.
Wonderful, marvelous.
Speaking of things that are wonderful and marvelous, you know, we have over 100,000 links on the network, and it is amazing that sometimes one link that you really don't think much about just really strikes a nerve, and the community just finds it so awesome that they retweet it and post messages in the user form about it. But one thing that was given to us last week was a link to the Encoro South African Waterhole Webcam. That's right, you can listen to wildlife coming and getting their liquid refreshment. You can hear thunderstorms. It's a really cool thing, and I suspect if you listen at the right time, you might even be able to hear the food chain in action, hear some animal consume another for dinner. It seems like every day around 5 or 6 o'clock, they have a nice storm down there.
Wow, every time I've listened to it, it's been fairly quiet, and then I kind of hear the snorting and snuffling of some very large creature, and then it goes away. So you kind of want to keep listening just to see what's going to happen next.
Well, you might want to turn up the volume. It starts at a pretty low volume. Some computers, I think you actually have to press the play button and the flash player first, and then it will launch every time you go back to the page. We also found one for a webcam in Arkansas in their wilderness. Not quite as exciting, and there's some big loud compressor of an air conditioner in the background, so it doesn't quite feel as back to nature as what you hear in South Africa. But I think it's pretty cool, and it's good stereo, and I think it's interesting that before it begins, it plays you an ad for the pretzel M&Ms.
Yeah, it does.
Which sounds gross to me. I'm not feeling pretzel M&Ms. Well, Ricky, I probably made a few enemies because I thought these comments were right on the mark and actually long overdue. I'm surprised they took so long to publish a response. But what I'm talking about, the president of the Consumer Electronics Association, Mr. Gary Shapiro, he came out and criticized H.R. 3101. This is the bill in the U.S. House of Representatives that actually wants to mandate that over 2,000 manufacturers of electronic appliances and multimedia actually make make their products accessible. Now, that sounds good on the surface.
People really were upset that you said, wow, this guy's right on the mark. And I think the thing to keep in mind from my perspective, obviously, I want accessibility a lot. But when you have government intervention, I honestly think this could hurt things more than it helps things. And with governments, what they want to do is come in and take a very bureaucratic and possibly a very narrow-minded view of accessibility. What I'd like to see more of is focus groups of the consumers who are actually involved rather than a government sitting down and saying, okay, we have mandated that each manufacturer add a capture button, just for example, to every remote control they manufacture. And when you do something like that, excellent. Captioning, which is very easily accessible for the deaf from a single button. Now, these manufacturers go through, they do it, they say, hey, we did what the government told us to, we're now accessible. Yes, to one segment of the population. There was never a chance for the consumers to say what it is that they wanted, and certainly these manufacturers, once they've done this thing which is mandated by the government, they're never going to want to think beyond that, and that concerns me.
I've written a song about it. Well, not a song, but a lyric. Mandated access seldom works, ADOBE.
I love it.
But no, seriously, folks, believe me, we all want accessibility in, you know, as great a detail as possible, but we must be realistic. If adding accessibility to every device, most of which we will never buy because we don't have the money, i.e., first we need to solve the unemployment issue so that we have money to go out and buy items. But more importantly than that, if we're adding $15, $20, $30 to the cost of every appliance, we are really harming the U.S. economy, because what does that leave manufacturers to do but export and start producing products in other countries, ultimately really hurting the economy? And I just don't think it's right to mandate that technologies be put into devices that we do not buy. The number one reason we don't have better accessibility to appliances and electronic devices, in its simplest form, it's apathy. People are not taking the time, A, to compliment manufacturers when they've done so either by design or strictly by coinkydink, that they've made a product accessible, or at least mostly accessible to the point of usability. We need to advocate for the things we want. I've said it before and I'll say it again because it's my podcast and I'll rant if I want to. If each person would choose one item, one piece of technology, one piece of electronics, one thing they would like to see greater accessibility to, we would be unstoppable. Just pick one. Send us an email, resources@serotalk.com. We'll be glad to give you some ideas of how to start an email campaign or maybe an online petition. You don't have to do it alone. I mean, it works better when we collaborate and work in groups.
When we work as a team. I think that people are discouraged because this kind of thing doesn't happen overnight. We continue to advocate and we're slowly but surely making a difference. But again, that can sometimes be discouraging where people think, wow, we're going to have to continue to fight for the rest of our lives. Wouldn't it be nice if a government entity came along with some power behind it and helped us out? Again, I just don't think having the government involved is going to help at all. Not only do you have this narrow view of accessibility, you have manufacturers who, when they think about accessibility, they kind of cringe about the government mandates rather than thinking about universal design, which is done just in the process of being innovative. And that's really what we want more than anything.
Yeah, we still have to pursue convincing the electronics and all other industries that we are a viable market. And then when you build in accessibility for the blind and visually impaired and the deaf community, you also improve accessibility to persons who are maybe older and don't want to admit that they're losing their sight or hearing. But I like to look at great examples of how industry, through innovation and cooperation with partners, can solve some of the issues we have. And I'll give you two great examples. Recently, one is what's being touted as the world's first talking TV. Ocean Blue in the United Kingdom, in partnership with the RNIB, the Royal National Institute for the Blind, a major manufacturer of chips that are included in most TVs, ST Microelectronics, and a Korean company called Arian Technologies. Basically, we are going to have a talking set-top box where you'll be able to find what's currently on and what's coming up in future shows. And that should be out by late this summer. I think it'll be starting first in the UK, so I still don't know of plans to bring it into the United States. Maybe we'll find out more about that at this year's conventions.
And there's apparently also a group in Spain who's doing this, so these guys may not necessarily be the first, but they're at least the most publicized.
That's right, and phase two of this project will add voice commands so that you will be able to say channel up, channel down, or volume up, volume down, or go to 33 or what have you. So we are very excited to see this coming into fruition, and we certainly will let you know when we find out more specifics about it coming to the USA or other countries as well. Another example is DICE has come out with the ITR-100A, and this is a talking AM-FM HD radio. I want to emphasize ITR-100A because the 100 does not have the speech capability built into it, but the ITR-100A has six AM and FM presets, the ability to tell you the frequency you're listening to. I don't know if it can read other information that sometimes the HD stations display. I didn't get any indication of that. But the retail on this device is $249, although you can get it for a lower price from third parties. I believe Sun Sounds of Arizona will be selling the product. So what it will do is have the capability that if you live in a part of the country where your radio reading service broadcasts on one of the HD channels, you'll be able to submit the ID of your radio and automatically have access if you travel to any part of the country. So say if when I go to ACB in Phoenix, I could take this radio and it will automatically pick up the feed from Sun Sounds because I am registered in the system. So this radio, I'm told, has above normal FM reception. They didn't check the AM on it. Said it has a pretty good built-in sound, but you can hook up an external speaker. Has 5 watts, pretty good output. So if you have a little bit of hearing impairment as well, the device should be loud enough to do what you need. So again, this is industry creating solutions based on user need and seeing the viable market for these products. That's what we need to be going for, not mandated access from Washington, D.C. And I'll tell you, folks, if you've got 2,000 manufacturers and you've got congressmen, many can be bought for $5,000 to $10,000 per vote. Do you really think this is going to pass? I will be surprised if it passes. Ricky, I will buy you dinner if this passes.
I would have to agree. You're probably right that it will not, but we shall see.
Even if this does happen, and I'm not inclined to believe it will, I think it'll be like getting rid of the income caps on Social Security. It'll come up over and over again, and I don't know that it will ever be resolved. But if it does, there certainly will be some compromises that come into play. And I say we work with industry and solve it the good old-fashioned way, by market
demand. You got it.
Supply and demand.
Right on. Preach it, brother.
Something that could ultimately give us a lot greater accessibility in ways that we haven't thought of was last week we had E3 Technology Expo, and Microsoft debuted the Xbox 360S and a technology called Kinect, K-I-N-E-C-T. And what this offers is the ability to track and execute body gestures and voice commands. And what they showed, hands-free gaming, they were showing exercise programs, dance programs, a program for children to play with animals and have them walk and sit and do jump rope. This could really be a powerful tool to help improve the quality of life for blind persons through a number of ways. First, maybe improving exercise, which we all need more of, and I'll be the first to admit that I do. Think of some of the other ramifications, the ability to teach us better posture or making eye contact or just a whole wealth of social skills, cane techniques, or even how to interface with a guide dog. Can you imagine like a kind of a dummy dog or something, and you walk around your living room and you try different commands?
Yeah, that'd be pretty awesome. I really think that a lot of people who aren't gamers sort of ignored the excitement around Kinect and that kind of thing because it's touted as strictly a gaming platform. But I think there are going to be a lot of uses for this technology that we just haven't seen yet. And right now, for blind folks who aren't gamers, there are still some exciting things like, I believe, the ability to do voice navigation through Netflix menus and things like that. Right now, there are some possibilities, but I expect things to get a lot more interesting in the months to come.
I don't think 1.0 is it's going to necessarily give us a lot out of the box. And it'll be another scenario where we will have to ask for accessibility on two fronts, A, from Microsoft's side, and hopefully to get some developers to actually harness the power of this technology. Now, you could argue we did it first, and I don't mean we as in Serotek, but Nintendo Wii. But this one doesn't require any mats or any controllers. And I do have to give credit to the makers of the Wii because they actually came out with a cane, something to help teach blind people cane technique. And of course, another tech podcast referred to it as the Nintendo Dildo. But
alrighty.
Yeah. Well, you got to love mainstream tech coverage of accessibility products, you know?
Indeed. Well, hey, that could get people excited about accessibility. You bring out something referred to as that.
Well, it's all about the tagline, right? To get the interest of people. I think it holds some real promise. We'll be very curious to see how this may be used. If my son gets one, what I'm able to accomplish with it. You are right. You can do voice commands, Netflix, and I think Pandora. Oh, and they also announced the next Windows Live Messenger will have video chat capabilities. Now, with that said, I just installed the new Windows Live Messenger app for the iPhone just released before this podcast, and it is, I call it
Inaccessible Messenger.
That's
right. I thought that was right on.
Yes. Thanks, Microsoft. I really get concerned with Microsoft. They make strides forward, and they're like one step up and two steps back. So, hopefully, with the number of retweets and the number sign in front of Microsoft, they'll get the hint. Could you think about us when you do this stuff, please? We are not out of luck for Windows Messenger because there is an app called Nimbuzz, right?
Yes, Nimbuzz is great. I love the fact that we have choice. So take that, Microsoft. Nimbuzz does Skype, AOL, Yahoo, Jabber, I think, and a few other things that I'm not thinking of right now. Now, there is a CAPTCHA for the sign-up process for Nimbuzz. What you do is create a master account, and then you're able to add each of your IM services to that. There is a CAPTCHA, but use something like WebVism or good old Celona.net, and they got you covered.
Ricky, do you ever use Amtrak, or have you ever traveled by train?
I hadn't actually traveled by train until a couple of years ago, and I remember being just so astonished that the train had electrical outlets, and I could plug in my laptop. Of course, I didn't have any access to a network then, so I was just working on documents, but I loved being able to plug in right there on the train.
Well, that could change, because Amtrak plans to offer free Wi-Fi on board nationwide. They've already been doing it on the East Coast. For those of you who are bloggers or like to build websites, WordPress 3.0 has been released, and it has a few cool features, not only some new templates and configurability, but it also has what's called a CMS, or content management system. So in other words, you could have multiple websites, so you could have multiple blogs through one instance of WordPress, or even use it to build your website. We just rolled it out on serotalk.com. So far, so good. We'll kind of let you know as we play with it a little bit more. And of course, you can get a free one if you want to go play over at wordpress.org, or of course you have many of the website services like Bluehost. They usually have what's called a cPanel or control panel. You can go in and install it. If you want listings and ratings and have your results show up in Google, a blog is much more effective than actually building a website for that purpose. Blind Bargains has compiled a list of sites where you can use barcode scanners. And that's pretty cool. I bought one and I paid about $200. It's a little more expensive, but it is a little more effective in actually capturing the UPC code off of the box or can or what have you, find out what this product is. That's not to take anything away from, say, a product like the ID Mate Summit, an awesome piece of technology. Unfortunately, not within the price
about
10 region.
Times more expensive,
right?
Isn't it?
It's about $1,200. Now, in fairness, they are using a professional grade scanning device that, in and of itself, may cost $700 to $800. So, I think they're doing the best they can. They're offering a very quality product, but this is a more economical way that you can at least get information. You got some stuff in front of you. You'd like to know what it is before you open it up. Barcode reader and to scan and get that information is bcscan.com. Sometimes you can just get that code and paste it right into the search box of Google, and it'll come back and tell you the product and ingredients and sometimes even cooking directions. So cool stuff there. Thanks to all the work that J.J. Meadow is doing at bcscan.com. Well, Ricky, a petition has been started to ensure Google Chrome is accessible, and it is called what else but the Google Chrome Screen Reader Accessibility Petition. Last I looked, about 300 signatures on that bad boy, just asking, we have access to this great tool. We talked about it in the last podcast. It's one of the fastest around, probably one of the most secure browsers around, and we just want access to it as well. So get the link at serotalk.com and put in your two cents. GW Micro announces the BookSense Buddy.
Hey, buddy!
It just makes you feel good to say it, doesn't it?
Yeah,
BookSense Buddy.
Oh, hey, buddy.
Is it going to give me a hug?
GW Micro BookSense Buddy is in beta, and it allows you to unzip NLS books and transfer different content to your BookSense device. So if that overwhelms you, or
if you just like the convenience of it.
Exactly.
You feel like pushing a button and say, hey, go there.
I've been talking a lot, so I'm going to let you, Ricky, talk about an article we posted labeled 8 Incredible Health Innovations That Changed Lives.
Yeah, it's very cool, and I'm not going to go through all 8, but I'd highly encourage you to go read the article itself. What it's talking about is ways in which technology is being used to improve the quality of lives for people with various types of disabilities. For example, for those who have ALS and are needing to use the movement of their eyes to communicate, there is a bit of technology which is actually going to have some open source contributions, so it's a lot less expensive than the traditional eye gaze type systems and so on, and will allow not only communication through looking at letters, but also through drawing just with eye movement. There is the ability to change a prescription for eyeglasses just by altering the amount of liquid which is inside the glasses. It's a rather interesting way of going about things, and it's also a much less expensive way of going about things. So,
well, that's great, because there's so many mistakes with prescriptions. So the fact that they can be quickly corrected, or like you
exactly.
said, adjusted and as people's vision changes.
Right. Not only that, but look at the people in third world countries who may not have any access to this type of thing at all, just because of the expense involved. Having something a lot less expensive is going to be able to help a lot more people. The same is true for solar-powered hearing aids. So now you no longer have the very expensive hearing aid batteries and hearing aids themselves. There's a set which are solar-powered, so it's going to help a lot of people who, because of the expense, were not able to get access to hearing aids at all.
That's awesome stuff. So check that article out, along with links to everything we talk about at serotalk.com. Well, there's something called floss manuals. Sink your teeth into 49 user manuals and documents that Jamal Mazrui has compiled into one zip archive. They include tips on using Firefox, Audacity, which of course is the free audio recorder, as well as the VLC media player. The new Mac Mini. This is an interesting device because a lot of people want to get into the Macintosh but don't want to shell out $1,199 for, you know, a MacBook Pro. So here you have a device that, you know, has the same level of power, but the new Mac Mini has gone to the aluminum case. They call it a unibody design. They have put the power supply inside the device. It now has an internal power supply rather than this standalone big ugly brick that they used to have, that one of my friends complained had a poor connector and could easily become disconnected. And perhaps the coolest thing is, in the past, you could not open that device up, at least not easily. A few folks did it, but you had to be a pretty brave soul. So now they've changed it so that you can upgrade the RAM yourself. There's a circular compartment on the bottom. You do need a tool to do it, but you can get inside and upgrade from the default of 2 gig up to 8 gig of RAM. And what they've done is made it look like the Apple TV, and I think they're setting it up to be the replacement. I know Mike said that they were going to make the Apple TV accessible, and maybe this is the way. The Mini looks like it's going to become the living room, home theater, multimedia device. That's the primary market. So while, again, you talk about dual purpose, blind folks can use it as a great entry-level machine to get in and play around with the Mac and even install Windows on it if they want to, but also use it as a home theater multimedia device for Netflix and just listening to your music and pumping it through your home theater system. In the past, you would sometimes get busy messages because maybe it was a little underpowered for what a lot of people wanted to do, the original Mac Mini or even the last Mac Mini. So I think this one is going to be a good product. I think it's got enough under the hood to meet the needs of people wanting to get into using it as an accessibility device. They also removed one of the USB ports and placed it with an SD card slot, and that works great for copying your books and other stuff that you might have on an SD card. Have an HDMI port with audio, so folks who are into surround sound like I am, you're hooked up there. This is an interesting title. It says, "The Apple Store app comes to the Apple Store." That reminds me of being in a restaurant once, and on the menu, I swear to God, it said chicken fried chicken.
Oh, yeah, honey. That's a Southern thing. You got that chicken fried chicken. It does sound hilarious, and you're thinking, what does that even mean? It is very tasty, by the way. And
yes, I've had it. It's a standalone, you know, I guess, breaded breast or something, right, with the,
right.
All the Southern
spices.
Right, it's
like chicken fried steak, except right. It's chicken.
Anyway, the Apple Store app basically is an app you can install on your iPhone that lets you buy various Apple products and services, including even the iPhone. And we'll get into the iPhone 4 and some of the trauma that has introduced in the last week, a little later in the podcast. But the app is fully accessible. Again, Apple sticking to their cause of making sure that all our apps are usable by the blind. And the final Apple story I have in this segment anyway is that Stone Leopard 10.6.4 came out with a lot of updates, but also included an update for malware prevention. Basically, there was an exploit in iPhoto that could be used to get passwords and other key logging. So let's be realistic. It does have some security holes, and I would like to see Apple be more upfront about disclosing that they've done security updates. But in fairness, Microsoft did not do this at first, but they were forced to, and Apple will be soon, as now with their current market value exceeding Microsoft, people are going to find exploits and take pride in publicly posting those in social networks and other blogs and getting that information out there. So Apple, I hope you rise to the challenge and just be upfront that you have security holes and you're fixing those holes, and that, yes, maybe people need to install some antivirus or malware software. TV ads were misleading. You know, I'm a Mac. I'm a PC. Well, guess what? I'm a Mac and I don't get viruses. And that's just not right to do that.
That's not true at all. People who were saying that even before the ads, well, the Mac is ever so much more secure. And if that was ever true, it certainly is not at the moment.
Exploits have been found. And, you know, so I'm glad Apple is addressing it. And of course, it uses more of a sandbox environment for Safari. So it does minimize it. And you still have to use common sense when clicking on links in emails or, you know, URLs embedded in Twitter posts and so forth. But still, I mean, come on, folks.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to be smart about security no matter what platform you're on. That's all I'm saying.
Twitter. A lot of folks have been getting errors, especially in sending messages or occasional downtimes, usually later in the evening or overnight. But they have stated these issues will continue at least to the end of the month. They should have their upgrades in place by then. They've stated that they never anticipated the load of traffic that they have now, and they found some flaws in their initial configuration. So they will be getting that up to snuff. I know that Mongoose Q has said that you will need to have version 4.0 of Quitter. And so I would also encourage people who use other things like McTwit or TW Inbox, the mainstream product that lets you do Twitter through Outlook, and Tweakini for Windows Mobile. I think Syrinx already has it covered in the Mac. Basically, what I'm trying to say is that you get the latest Twitter client to ensure that you are compliant with these changes that will be going into effect as of July 1st. Another thing that's interesting is Twitter is changing the links to not count against your 140 character limit. Well, kind
Except
of, sort
will.
Of. They will. So at least 20 of your 140 characters.
Yeah, what they're essentially doing is wrapping the link and shortening it. So they're creating their own URL shortener, and those URLs will not exceed 20 characters. So 20 of that 140 characters will be taken up with this shortened URL. If you use a URL shortener with your Twitter client of choice, you can certainly continue to do that. I think what Twitter hopes to do is to be able to sell some of this tracking data to people, to be able to show what people are visiting, what they're clicking on, and so on. One thing that has yet to be determined is how users are going to know whether what they're clicking on is some sort of malware so that they have some general idea where it is that they're going. Two things were proposed. One is that the entire URL is displayed once you receive the tweet, or at least a portion of it is displayed so that you can kind of see what URL you're, or what domain you're going to anyway.
Yeah, because that's the biggest issue is these URL shorteners are used to install malware on your system. I talked with a SAMNet member who clicked on a link that said YouTube video, but it was actually a virus. So,
ouch.
So if you want something from YouTube, better to go to YouTube.com directly. But we all do it. I mean, I use the URL shortener so that I have the other 120 characters to post as best a description as possible so you can decide if the link is worth clicking on. So it'll be curious to see how they implement this. And if they're doing that, are they taking liability then for the validity of these URLs? Are they going to have ways to detect which ones are going to be excluded? Because
yeah,
what's to
absolutely.
Keep hackers from using it? So I see it presents a lot of security issues and liability issues for Twitter as a company.
Hope they've thought it out pretty carefully.
I think this article's titled incorrectly, but the title is Facebook is responsible for 1 in 5 divorces. And I think
I'm not the jerk. It's Facebook.
It's not my fault that Facebook posted that I had a cyber affair.
How could I be blamed? It's Facebook's fault that my husband found out I did stuff. That's pretty ridiculous. But basically what's happening is that Facebook is being cited in a lot of these divorce cases because it is the tool that was used to find out about the bad things going on behind the scenes. And it's worth saying that if for whatever reason you decide to engage in behavior that you don't want other people to know about, doing that online is not the most secure place to be. It's very easy for people to track that. It used to be that spouses would try and get passwords and look at email and things like that, and Facebook has sort of taken the place of that.
You know, folks, it's been done with email for years. Facebook is now the portal. Think twice about what you post. There is no such thing as privacy. And of course, a study I read today said that 65% of people said that even if they knew that a site was violating their privacy, they would probably use it anyway, in this case, Facebook in particular. So people create their own problems.
That's right.
I just wonder if the stats kind of hold up in the blind and low vision community. I always wonder those things, you know, if we are on par for the course with the rest of society, or if maybe ours are lower, or heaven forbid, higher percentage.
I don't know why we would be any different. The blind community may communicate a lot more online. I know so many people who didn't necessarily get out of their houses a whole lot for whatever reason, or maybe just didn't want to, but communicating online was very comfortable. And so we may have a higher degree of people online and engaged in social networking in general. So who knows? Our stats may be up there.
When we come back, we're going to round up some new voices and talk about the following stories. AT&T iPhone pre-order security issues abound. Apple sells unlocked iPhones in the UK, France, and Canada. Canadian wireless carriers could be forced to unlock their phones. Verizon Wireless is going to drop their unlimited data plan. Apple asks the FCC to keep the iPhone 4 details under wraps. The HTC Incredible has a bug that reveals your banking and other private SSL pages. New Nokia E73 can be had for $69. The next Navigon GPS 1.6 will allow multitasking on the iPhone 4, allowing you to even get voice directions while on a phone call. Those stories and more after this shameless plug coming up on the Serotalk Podcast. Join us for Podcast 45, July 5th. Because it's all about books. Learn about the iBooks reader for the iPhone. Will the NFB be launching Blio at this year's 2010 convention in Dallas? Learn about free and paid upgrade options for the Victor Reader Stream. Learn about GW Micro's BookSense Buddy software for the BookSense player. Will any blindness-specific products be adding support for the popular EPUB format with over 1 million books? What new mainstream affordable solutions will be made available for reading books? Answers to these questions and more can be heard in the upcoming July 5th podcast from your source for the of the latest assistive technology news that really matters. It's the Serotalk podcast and blog at www.serotalk.com. SEROTALK.com. With the release of Apple's iOS 4 for the new forthcoming iPhone 4 as well as the iPhone 3GS, we thought we'd create a little discussion here. We have Scott Rakowski from Sydney, Australia, and Dr. Robert Carter from the Tech Doctor podcast at www.dr-carter.com. And we'll compare notes here, what we found thus far in the first day of playing around with iOS 4. What are you liking about the new operating system? Some folks say it's faster. It seems to be more responsive to me. I did hear voiceover stutter a little bit, but what are your first impressions? What are you liking, or bugs, glitches, gotchas that you found in your first day?
Well, I'll start with I really like the new folder system. It's really great to be able to organize your apps, put all your radio apps in a folder, your news apps in a folder, your entertainment apps in a folder, and you can then flip through all ever how many I have. I had 4 pages, and I've gotten it down to 2 pages, and I probably could actually get it down to 1 if I wanted all of them on one page, but I sort of like having the less used apps on the second page, and so that's how I have mine organized. So I'm loving folders. I will say that for me at least, they are very creatable with VoiceOver. You just drag an app on top of another app, but it took me some patience to do it. You have to really drag, sometimes slowly, and sometimes it does seem like you don't wind up where you think you're going to, and that's probably just not being able to see the screen, or maybe sometimes VoiceOver is not completely accurate in what it's reporting. But with a little patience, probably took me a couple hours to organize all my apps the way that I wanted them.
I kind of thought the same thing. I seemed to do well when it was on the same page, but when I would bring an app from another page and I would put it where I was sure the app was, sometimes it would put the app in that spot and then move the folder one notch to the right. I don't know if you saw that, but that's one thing that I saw.
I did see that. Also, I saw that sometimes for some reason, even if you held your finger down, when you were in the process of moving an app, it would go ahead and create a folder. Maybe if you set on top of an app too long without moving on or something. I'm not sure exactly what the magic formula is, but sometimes I would get a folder when I didn't really want one at a particular spot, and so I would have to clean that up. Fortunately, it's all very easy to undo if you don't want something that gets created. The other thing that I found out that really helped me in the end was to go ahead, before I moved anything, really get a picture in my mind of the layout of the screen, of where the apps were that were involved in this move, what part of the screen they were in, and then to really head right for that part of the screen when I was dragging the app seemed to help quite a bit. And I will admit that I got quite a bit better at it by the time I was done than I was when I first started. So I would encourage everyone to not be afraid to try the folder move.
Yeah, I found it better to put the folders either top left, top right, or bottom left, bottom right. And eventually what I did at the end, it dawned on me that, geez, I got all these apps on other pages, that why don't I just take my top 4 categories and put those folders in the dock? And then once I did that, that sped up because I could just go to each page and then just drag the app right down and it went into that appropriate folder. Though I do have more than 4 folders, that helped quite a bit. And you're right, if you accidentally put an app in a folder, you could simply go back in there and it seemed like if you went above, because you only get 12 apps per folder, so if you went up in the screen, it would actually take it out of the folder and back into the main page, and then you could manipulate it. A few little gotchas there, but a powerful feature, very doable. I love it. One of my favorites as well. What else are you feeling for the phone? Have you played with the multitask manager?
I have played with it, and I don't...
Breaking mobile.
I'm sorry.
EDT, Interior Secretary Salazar says he will issue order imposing drilling moratorium.
That's my iPhone.
A drilling moratorium. Is that AP?
That's AP mobile.
I have that as well.
Push notification.
I like that, yes.
712. So,
that thing might just went off as well. Maybe people listening don't know that the iPhone can do that. You can get late breaking news stories pushed to you if you allow that.
You certainly can. But as we were saying, this task switcher, you get to it by double tapping the home key. At this point, I am, number one, not very used to it. And number two, because we don't really have multitasking apps, I'm not crazy about it, although I don't dislike it. But I have not gotten in the habit of making a lot of use of it. I have used it a few times when I wanted to switch to something that I knew I had recently used. And right now, that seems to be how it works, is that your most recently used apps are kept in that little area down there, that little dock area at the bottom when you switch into that mode.
Scott found an interesting thing, I think, swiping three fingers to the right with some additional options in the task manager, didn't you, Scotty?
All the built-in apps are multitasking apps. Yeah, when you swipe with three fingers to the right, you get controls, and you also can lock the orientation into portrait mode. Very, very nice feature.
When you slightly flip the phone in one direction or another, it doesn't just go change orientation on you. I like that feature a lot. What it actually does when you do that three-finger swipe, it actually changes pages for this dock, and so it shows you even more apps that you have recently used, including the magic button to lock the orientation and so forth.
So I think it will be better when Apple approves all of the apps that have been submitted. Say, for example, Utunes, it will actually go back and resume playing the radio station you were listening to. Or it might be nice for your email to leave it open, or in the case of Skype, so that you could leave it open and actually receive a call if someone calls you on Skype. Or the forthcoming Navigon 1.6, it will be able to sit in the background and actually give you voice directions while you're in a phone call.
I've noticed that on my iPhone, at least, when I used to receive a text message coming in from Twitter, it would always say 40404 because that's Twitter's text number. But now, most of the time when a text message comes in, instead of saying that, it speaks the time. A couple times it has spoken the Twitter text number, but most of the time it just says the time, which doesn't let you know where the message is coming from. The second thing is that if you have a note in one of your contacts and you open up that contact, VoiceOver just says note, but it doesn't read the contents of the note unless you go into edit mode within the contact, as if you were going to change the phone number or something, and then it will read the contents of the note. So I did report that one to accessibility at Apple. I'm sure they'll fix that one because that clearly is a bug. I really like the new touch typing feature. I like the language rotor feature. Those are probably the main ones that really that I've discovered so far that I like.
When you open up the Messages app to send a text message, and it now gives you a different pitch to tell you that you've opened Messages, and does it for other apps as well, but you open up Messages and it says new message to, and you just type in the first few characters of who you're looking for, and when you double tap on that particular contact in the list, it then puts you straight into the message area to start typing your message. You no longer have to actually go and swipe to that area anymore. There's also a really nice feature now that you have to turn on under settings, phone, and messages. You can now have just above the send button the count of how many characters are left in your 160 character limit.
I got a call from my son, and it read the number like three or four times during the call, I think going in and out of speakerphone mode.
The other thing it does in that mode as well, which is interesting, is when you actually are on a call and you hold the phone away from your head, it actually puts the dial pad up on the phone in case you want to interact with an IVR or something like that. And you've also got a hide keyboard button in the bottom right-hand corner to go back to the hold, end call buttons.
Also joining us tonight is Mike Arrigo. Now, he doesn't have an iPhone, but has the iPod Touch. Any observations on your end as to changes, improvements, good or bad, with the software?
The one thing I like, the improvement too, as far as Safari goes, there's many more items added to the web rotor now, as far as like tables and even plain text. Not only include form fields, but edit controls, buttons, so you can't actually move to the next button, the next, you know, edit control. Those are not enabled by default to include in the rotor. You have to enable them because a lot of that's covered under form controls. You can have it speak the letters phonetically, M, Mike, or N, November.
Go into the settings in the general VoiceOver settings themselves, and the language rotor, if you keep flicking to the right, is at the very last setting under all those VoiceOver settings. You can choose to select whichever languages you want to be a part of that rotor, and then once you've got those languages selected, you simply use the rotor gesture and you have a new option in your rotor called language, and you just flick up and down once you're on language to select whichever language.
The way I remember that is SGAV, Settings General Accessibility VoiceOver. So if anyone's new coming into the iPhone, maybe going with the iPhone 4 or buying one of the used ones out there.
Just flick the rotor here just a second. I'm on characters now.
Language.
And now I just switch to language, and I can just change
default language
to the default language.
Safari, double tap to open.
Go back
language
to Karen.
Australian English.
Now I'm on Karen, and so that's just how easy it is to make that change. It's very nice.
The new typing mode. Get somewhere where the QWERTY keyboard would be enabled, turn the rotor to the left, and then you have an option to change it from, by default, at what it calls standard, but you can switch it to the touch typing mode, and it's awesome. You put your finger over the letter, release it, it automatically enters it. My typing speed has doubled as a result.
When you choose the rotor to typing mode, you've then got to flick up or down with one finger to go from standard to touch typing. And it also works in the phone app. If you're in the phone app and you're on the keypad to dial a number, you can move to the number and take your finger off the number and it gives you that number. The delete key, you have to double tap on delete so you don't hold it down and start deleting things by mistake. They've done that for a reason. And they've also done it with the more button in the bottom left-hand corner to switch from letters to numbers and punctuation. And there was something I read about the full stop key where you used to be able to hold it down to get different options under the period or full stop key.
You used to be able to tap the space key twice and it would insert a period and a space at the end of your sentence. Now you have to tap the space key twice very, very quickly to get it to insert a period. Otherwise, it will just insert two spaces. So you have to tap and release very quickly on that space key. It still works, but the timing is different.
Going to a settings area, like when you go to general, for example, the first thing is settings. It now says back button also, which indicates that it will take you back.
And there's also a scrub gesture now, which presses the back button. So if you're someplace that has a back button, you can just do a scrub gesture, two-finger scrub gesture, and immediately the back button gets pressed. You can either do it up, down, or left, right, but it's just a little scrubbing motion with two fingers.
As far as the voiceover settings, there are a couple of new ones. You've got a setting like to indicate things with a pitch change button to pair up with a braille display, and then you have the web rotor and the language rotor.
But another big one I saw is the ability to turn off data that forces you to grab a Wi-Fi or some type of hotspot.
Couple other voiceover features that were in the iPad that are now in the iPhone. One of them is really quite nice. It's a four-finger swipe up and down gesture, which takes you to the very first control on the page, or swiping down takes you to the very last control on the page, which is very nice if you want to jump to the top or bottom of something.
Limited Bluetooth support. You do have the ability to type in data, characters A through Z, 0 through 9, although you do have to have the iPhone within reach because there's other gestures you still have to do on the phone itself. It did say the media buttons, play, stop, rewind, or back, and next would be available on the Bluetooth keyboard. Cut, copy, paste, and I guess even select all maybe. Can't like command tab or move between apps. So it is limited to the text input functionality. So to me, the biggest advantage there would probably be typing messages, maybe typing in contact information for individuals.
There is a new version of iTunes, and apparently there's a whole new contract that most of us just agree to by pressing the agree button. And one of the things that we've agreed to is to allow Apple to gather information from us as related to these new ads from Apple. And one of the things that you can do if you don't want that to happen is on your device, you can go to OO, that's OscarOscar.apple.com, and opt out. That's what the O stands for, opt out of that if you want to do that.
That actually doesn't take effect until the same day that iAds do, which is July 1st. If you get an app that's free but supported by iAds, will that ad not show up, or will it come up and tell you that you have to allow iAds to use that app?
It has to be done from the actual device in question, like your iPhone, your iPad, etc. It doesn't stop you from getting ads. It just stops you from getting ads relevant to your interests, from what I read yesterday.
I think it turns off Apple's collection of cookies about what you're doing, so they're not tracking your interests anymore.
Well, thanks. That's a very, very important clarification where that's concerned. Our July 5th podcast will be all about books, and we'll be talking about a number of things, including the iBooks application, as well as other methods for reading what is quickly becoming the de facto format for electronic publications, and that's the .epub format. All right, thank you, Robert Carter, Scott Rakowski, and Mike Arrigo, keeping you in the know. This is Michael Law. What do users of Samnet enjoy most?
The movies.
Movies, too, and I like the fact that we can use Pop and IMAP for our email, and my new discovery is the fact that you can make CDs, and it's very accessible and easy to do.
old radio shows.
You like Media Lab is very accessible, simple.
Yeah. I like my document scan.
I love everything about System Access. Very affordable.
Shows us inaccessible internet.
Yes, I love that.
And the socializer is a neat thing.
Also, the flexibility of the price, so reasonable.
That's where I met my sweetie.
Aww.
Meet interesting people, learn cool stuff, and maybe even meet that special someone. Begin your free 7-day trial today of the System Access screen reader, voice chat, and all the cool things on SAMNet. www.satogo.com. Back for round two. Ding, ding. All things mobile phone, mobile devices now. We have Mike Calvo, Ricky Inger. You can't get rid of her. And Jeff.
Nope, I'm not going anywhere.
Jeff Bishop joining us. Long time no here, buddy.
Good. Hey, how's it going?
Very good.
Hey, man, how are those desert skies in that desert heat?
It's going to be 107 here today and 109 tomorrow.
I got one thing to say for you, buddy. Better you than me.
Yeah, indeed. This means that in Phoenix, it's probably 114 degrees tomorrow. Bring your booties for your puppy.
Bring amenities for the pool, except your iPhone.
Yeah, but don't worry, Michael. I'll walk you around the pool. I promise. I'll take you.
That's all right, buddy. You can. I'll take care of it. It's all good.
Come on, Michael. Right this way.
If you do it with the 3GS, it will just give you a recent upgrade.
You could always sell the 3GS first.
Yes.
Or maybe after.
$189 you can get for those bad boys at gazelle.com. And someone told me if you put in the promo code MACCAST, you can get another 15%. I did not know those phones had that value. I mean, I thought you could go out and grab them for $50, maybe $100 tops. And you know what's even more interesting? Basically, once you get the phone activated, you can pop out the SIM card and use it as an iPod Touch. And I mentioned this to my son, and he's like, oh, yeah, there's all kinds of young kids hanging out at the skate park, you know, with iPhones probably stolen using them as touches.
Nice.
Well, there is an economical way for folks who maybe want to play around with the technology, don't want the two-year commitment at AT&T to maybe find one on eBay or from a friend.
Yeah, I'm actually
excited.
But
you get the camera and the GPS using an iPhone as a touch. So it might make a little more sense.
I'm pretty excited to see that it's at $99 now with the contract. It's the most economical, accessible product on the market.
You know, I think it's interesting that Apple has gone out of their way to do an exclusive deal with AT&T. We're guessing the logic is they didn't want to make the phone available to every carrier and then have their reputation damaged if the carriers didn't have the infrastructure to handle the data and the amount of calls. And yet, we have the iPhone pre-orders and AT&T that I've seen firsthand, not only myself, but my son has a glitch in their database that interchanges shipping and billing addresses. And I'm telling you, folks, we have not seen the end of this yet. When these phones, some of them start going to the wrong address, you're going to hear a lot about this in the media. This issue is certainly not dead yet.
AT&T has dropped the ball so many times with the iPad thing. Oh, yeah, we can handle it. We can handle it. We're going to give you a $30 a month unlimited plan for your iPad because we think it's not going to do anything. And then Steve Jobs, you know, waves his magic wand and 2 million units get sold in a month. And AT&T says, oh man, wait, we can't do that. And they change their whole data plan and start this snowball effect in the industry now where everybody has gotten the fear of AT&T and now everybody has limited their data plans. It's kind of like being hooked on drugs. You know, either you stop doing the drug, in this case, stop consuming data and send a message. You really can't. I think that Apple's plan in this was getting together with the oldest carrier in the country, and they wanted the name brand recognition, and this has ended up blowing up in their face. There's got to be an out clause somewhere.
I will say this, there was some confusion, at least from what I had heard, about the unlimited data plan. I thought that if you switched phones that you would lose the unlimited data plan. That's not true. So if you have a Samsung Jack or any other phone and you switch to the iPhone, then you can keep your $30 unlimited data plan.
But so you must ask for it. Because AT&T
yes,
is notorious
true.
For offering you something, or it wouldn't surprise me in certain stores if people just sign that contract without reading it, that they've automatically been switched. So if you want to keep that unlimited data, you better make sure to ask for it.
Yeah, you definitely have to ask, that's for sure.
Verizon has stated that they're going to be doing this, I think, for their 4G network as well when that happens. Sprint right now, I just got the 3G, 4G hotspot type thing. We're going to be using them for the conferences. It's 5 gig limit on the 3G part, but unlimited on the LTE. LTE 4G. And here in Orlando, they're going to have it. They already have 4G in Dallas. Sorry, Phoenix. It's not going to be there for a while. I think Sprint has an opportunity here to really shine and go against the grain, and they could certainly use the customers.
People are even more upset now. A, you've got Apple selling unlocked phones in the UK, France, and Canada, but not the US. Canadian wireless carriers could be forced to unlock their phones if this proposed Cell Phone Freedom Act is adopted. Would you want government getting involved if it meant, Apple, you have to make them unlock?
Michael, right now, it's illegal to keep a phone locked in this country. I mean, if you really push it, if you go to AT&T and say, damn it, I want my phone unlocked, they have to unlock it legally. It is illegal. That was a law that was passed a couple years ago about locking and unlocking phones. I have a 3GS that's unlocked. I have chosen, by the way, not to upgrade to the iPhone 4. And the reason is that as a consumer, I just don't find a compelling reason to at this time. The camera is not something that's real important to me right now. The new form factor, I don't have a problem with battery life. I like my phone. I don't think I'll be upgrading to the iPhone 4, at least not now, and especially with all the nightmares I hear about you guys having. If you unlock an iPhone here in the United States, it's kind of pointless because you're going to only be able to use it on AT&T's 3G network anyway, because I use my iPhone on T-Mobile for sure, but I only can get Edge. But the irony, of course, is that my Edge is as fast as your 3G, so locked or unlocked doesn't really matter unless you're going to travel with it, in which case, if you're traveling and you've got an AT&T locked phone, then you're really screwed because you're locked into AT&T's international agreements, which tend to be as high as 30 to 80% higher than everybody else internationally.
Well, what is the deal with Apple asking the FCC to keep the data for the iPhone 4, keeping the details under wraps for an additional 45 days. I thought maybe they wanted to change out components. We've got the patents in place. So what would be the logic of that? Of course, if Apple had their way, they'd would prefer that their information never be made available.
I don't think it's so much the fact that they have their patents in place and stuff. It's just that if they change components at this point, then the FCC, I'm sure, is going to have to go ahead and reevaluate the phone and retest it. I think it's just so that people don't know what's in it. And quite honestly, as I said when I first heard about the phone, I'll betcha, maybe I'm wrong, but I'll betcha that it is a multi-carrier phone that does multiple carriers, that it will work on GSM and CDMA, and you never know, maybe LTE. I just can't believe that Apple developed this new generation of phone and they're not going to go for a refresh for a couple of years without the future of cellular data in the plans.
There are already articles out on the web about people who have taken their iPhones apart and looked inside and are discussing what's inside. The one I saw was talking all about the antennas that are now built into the new 4G, how really spectacular they were. You know, if it's not the FCC, somebody else will figure it out, you know, and it will be on the web sooner or later.
Well, of course, we have the growing number of Android-based phones, but now, me being a little security paranoid, I've been concerned about many of the things I've read. Not only the HTC Incredible, a bug some have called a feature that reveals banking and other SSL pages. I don't know where you get feature in that, but also something I just saw. I have a PDF file that if you follow at twitter.com/Serotalk, actually stating that 1 in 5 Android apps actually have security flaws.
I got good news and bad news for you on that front.
We in Windows have been living with it for years. What's new? But what's the good news?
Well, the good news is you're not going to have to worry about that. And the bad news is because Android, at least in its current iteration in version 2.1 and 2.2, ain't going to work for you, Jack.
Did you read the article we just posted basically stating that the screen reader in Android is great for TV Raman, he's the only one that understands it.
I don't want to point fingers here. My true story with Android. This is my third time around the rosy here trying to get Android to work. As I told you before, I'm on T-Mobile. When I first saw that these Android phones were coming out on T-Mobile, I got a Motorola Click, which was on version 1.5. Motorola promised that they were going to upgrade it. They were going to upgrade it. They didn't. T-Mobile did not take my phone back because I was beyond the buyer's remorse period, so I have a Motorola paperweight. Customer service gave me an opportunity to get one of these HTC, the MyTouch Slide, which is the latest and greatest HTC Android phone. My sister has one and friggin' loves it. She moved over from the the G1 to this phone and was just oohing and eyeing over it. It's got built-in maps, it's got voice control, it's got this, it's got that. Unless you're blind, of course, and you turn this phone on, shame on HTC, all the accessibility features were grayed out. It was deliberately out of there, so we had to go on the store and find TalkBack, KickBack, SoundBack, all the backs. And then the Marvin Shell, which I could understand when Marvin Shell was created, it was created for early Android products, and it's an archaic thing that only its developer or creators understand. It is not intuitive for a blind person at all, especially for a blind person that has never dealt with a touch interface. It's freaky enough for us to deal with a flat piece of glass, and then to actually hear a suggestion of putting a piece of tape on your flat piece of glass to locate. Oh, yes.
No.
Oh, yes, they did. But wait, it gets better. So we finally download this stuff, and then the HTC, the Sense UI, is inaccessible. This is the demon part of open source. Because it's open source, HTC can modify this in any way that they want, including putting on some proprietary, inaccessible front end on it. But the reality is, Google, I'm sure, you know, has and will say, hey, we just put the operating system out. What people do is their business. I gotta say, Google, I understand that, but any accessibility for blind people has been developed in a vacuum. I have never been approached by Google, nor have I seen a posting for any open comments on any Android version with blindness. In fact, the answers we've gotten are wait until we put it out. You'll get it when you get it. It's on its way. Has anybody here had any kind of conversations with Google, seen any lists, any surveys, any focus groups asking us what we think of their very inaccessible, accessible Accessibility Initiative?
I have seen some surveys that they did where they brought people in California and did some local testing on their web applications. And they broadcasted that out and then people put it on email lists. They are at least aware of needing to do this. That we exist. I don't think that there's an issue at an executive level at Google that accessibility is important. I think where things have fallen down is in the leadership of the accessibility group at Google, where they're not including the community, whether that be the AT companies themselves or people out in the community. You know, we have social networking now where Google could reach out and tap into the community, find out what's important. If Android is open source, then tap into that community, make it happen. You know, if Apple can do it in their closed architecture, why doesn't Google really take the bull by the horns here and truly drive accessibility through the open source community? That's what it's all about. There's no reason why right now Android shouldn't be accessible.
I think you hit the nail on the head. I think it falls in the leadership of that particular area. And the irony to me as a blind person is this individual is blind. So they know what it's like for us growing up as blind people to be told you'll get what you get and like it. I mean, one thing is to have a government agency tell me how they want me to live my life as a blind person. Another is a company that is supposedly out for my consumer dollar trying to get me to participate in regular commerce like everybody else. Tell me, we'll give you as much accessibility as we think you need when you need it and don't ask anymore. And if that's not exactly been stated, because it hasn't been stated that way, that is certainly the undertone or the overtone of the statements from this individual. When you write to Google, you get one-line answers. When you post to their groups, it's almost like, you know, don't ask. And I remind them, as I have before, and as you just said, Jeff, this is open source, which means community participation. I mean, if we were to look back at the history of the leadership, perhaps Google needs to reevaluate. Maybe they need to get somebody who's a little more consumer and community oriented and community aware to drive that initiative and to really allow us to be as excited as my sister is about her new phone. I think it's a great phone, but I can't use it. And I don't feel that I've got the support of Google to do it.
Well, to be fair, they've at least come to conferences like CSUN, for example, and talked to the community and took questions from the audience. I'd like to see them continue that effort more widely and not just do it at conferences to make sure that we are engaged as a community to ensure a level of accessibility. I mean, I don't want there to be one option out there.
Well, you're dealing with two different groups. At CSUN, a gentleman's name was Jonas Klink, and he was demonstrating System Access to Go and System Access with Google Chrome. And that was just released up on their blog that, you know, we are working behind the scenes as we have been, and we encourage other screen reader manufacturers to do the same. Unlike other folks in our industry, Serotech doesn't want everything just to work with our stuff and nobody else's. We want open standards for everybody. We are blind people first at Serotech, and then we are Serotechians. buttons. It's not a matter of providing access for Serotech users or for system access users. It's a matter of providing access for all accessibility products. And we encourage other AT manufacturers, GW Micro, Freedom Scientific, Dolphin, to jump on board and get in touch with Google and put your invoicing software away. I know Google's got money, but stop trying to get paid for every time that somebody wants you to support their product in your AT software. You know, we, the consumers, are paying you on one side. So take that money and invest it in development instead of litigation and make sure that you help your consumer have access to these new software products that are out there.
But as great as open source is not Google going to have to take a greater interest in putting some fundamental elements into the operating system? I mean, you're going to have the Chrome OS, coming out this fall?
I mean, that's one of my concerns is that Google is huge and it has any number of projects going on, not just Android, not just Chrome OS or the browser or whatever. I don't relish the idea of our needing to fight for accessibility for each of these platforms. I'd like to see a lot more open communication with Google as a whole, where accessibility is sort of understood and fought for across the board, rather than us having to say, thanks for making this little thing accessible, but hey, what about Chrome OS? And oh, by the way, what are you doing with Google Docs?
You have this thing about Google Docs, man.
I do. I'm obsessed with Google Docs.
Well, no, listen, that's important because Google Docs is being utilized in universities now. There are major issues there. Well, yeah. How they were able to sell Google Docs to universities from an accessibility standpoint is beyond me.
It's very simple, Jeff. This community needs to get up off its arstrabadistra and go and do something and start advocating. We've got a lot of blind people that are sitting at home that are doing nothing that could actually be out there pounding the virtual pavement and making some noise. Take your future, your AT future, seriously and understand that you may be unemployed, you know, or you may not be necessarily in school right now, but the reality is that sooner or later, because of shrinking budgets and costs and all that stuff, everything is going to end up on that computer. And if you don't agitate for your stuff to be accessible today, tomorrow's world's going to be awfully darker for us as blind people. And, you know, at Serotech, of course, we're trying to do all the time is get people to really get a really good understanding of what's going on out there. When Apple was talked to, I guess, about accessibility, they took the bull by the horns. They said, okay, they didn't just dip their toe in the accessibility water. Everything that's coming out of that group is accessible. And my only gripes with any of their hardware right now is the same gripe that any other consumer has. But as far as a blind person, I am ecstatic about what Apple has been doing. They're a company that other companies need to look at as an example.
But they were market driven. They wanted to go in and sell these MacBooks or whatever on a state level to like junior high and high school students, and accessibility was part of that. Obviously, they've gone far above and beyond the call there because they've continued it and are continuing to improve accessibility. But maybe that's the issue in Google. We haven't shown them on a large enough scale that we are a market. So, Mikey, is this correct? You actually gone back and purchased a Nokia phone?
Dude, I love it. I was surprised to hear that Nokia, it's an E73 smartphone, was actually available from T-Mobile for $69, Michael.
It's $69 and maybe $299 outright?
It's $299 outright, and the cool thing about it is if you pay the $299 outright, what they do is they'll spread it over like 20 payments. So you end up paying like $15 a month and you don't have to have a contract. It is a great deal. $69 after the war, you know, after the rebate. You go out and you pay your $299 to HandyTech for talks. Think that MobileSpeak is the same price. And because of the MobileSpeak, the breakdown that HandyTech has where you can buy MobileSpeak in all these different flavors, and the link to their program will be available in the notes, you can pay, you know, as you go for a MobileSpeak license, put it on this phone, and you've got a really good smartphone in your pocket. It works really well with both screen readers. Now, I did find some audio issues with Eloquence. I'm relatively sure that there's going to be a fix for the Eloquence issue. The problem that manifests itself right now, very interestingly enough, is that you can't make outbound phone calls when you're running the current version of Eloquence. You can use the nasty Nokia voice, and I have spoken to some folks at Nuance that say it will be available in version 5.1 of Talks whenever that's released. And unfortunately, I'm not close enough to the Talks group to know when that's going to be.
Some point soon.
Three people have told me, pretty hardcore Nokia users, that even they are not purchasing any more Nokia phones because they feel that the company is abandoning their efforts on accessibility and sliding backwards. And now you're saying that there is a TOCS 5.1 coming out. A lot of people were concerned.
Maybe the issue is not so much with the OS. It's that the apps are being developed in Qt, which Nokia bought in 2008 or something like that. Unfortunately, apps that are developed using that toolkit tend to be largely inaccessible. And of course, now that Nokia owns that, they're going to be encouraging apps to be developed using that.
Yeah, but again, I think it's a matter of really letting them know, again, that they need it. But it's still available, and there's still a whole lot of applications for the Nokia, the Series 3, the Series 5 phones. And they've got, I know people that really, really swear by those phones. I will say, though, I love the Nokia phone. It feels great to have, you know, the keypad, the keyboard. Nokia for texting has some of the best word prediction I have ever experienced. It actually learns from you as you type into it. Both screen readers work very well, both TOCS and Mobile Speak. I'm a TOCS user from the beginning, but Mobile Speak, it's right up there. I would honestly say on this phone, I have not noticed any difference between one or the other. In fact, I think that the compelling reason to buy Mobile Speak at this point is the fact that HandyTech has them where you can buy it out month to month. And this phone has built-in GPS. It has built-in 3G, so you are getting 3G speed. You can buy Wayfinder if you need it. It's still available for Symbian. At the end of the day, I mean, we want the Google experience because I want Apple to have some competition. The Nokia experience is so different from the Apple experience that they shouldn't even be spoken about in the same paragraph. It takes a particular mindset to work in the Apple environment if you've used a phone before. It's just the availability of interfaces and the way that some people don't like to touch and swipe and tap. And that's the one thing I twittered about. Everybody was like, what are you leaving? Your iPhone? Heavens no. I love my iPhone. I cannot live without the applications and without the ecosystem. Do I think that they're controlling and manipulative? You betcha. But the reality is that there is nothing that I have been able to experience as a blind consumer to parallel my Apple experience on my iPhone, on my iPad, you know, and I'm looking forward to other innovations from Apple with this OS 4. Along those lines, I'm very disappointed with the fact that I don't know what's going to happen to people that are using Mobile Speak in Windows, because Windows Mobile is going the way of the dodo bird later this year.
Is it because Apple has developed such a market for accessibility? We understand Microsoft is actually getting away for supporting any accessibility, at least in the initial release of Windows Mobile 7. What do we know about that? I got an email here asking, what did you guys mean when you said it's not going to be supported? You know, is Code Factory going to be able to do anything with it? Or are we stuck with 6.5? Or what's going on there?
I say, tongue-in-cheek, with a big old grin on my face, what part of it's not going to work with it didn't you understand? Did I stutter? Unfortunately, no. It's not going to work with any Windows Mobile 6.5 or earlier application. I don't know what Code Factory is going to do. I think it's quite sad because I know that they've got one heck of an investment in both Mobile Geo and in the Mobile Speak for Windows, which was when I was on Windows, that was my product of choice, my Sprint phone. It was awesome. We've reached out to Microsoft because, of course, we've got Samnet coming to various mobile platforms, and that does include Symbian. The first time announcement here, we are going to be on Symbian when Samnet, the new version of Samnet, comes out. We've reached out to Microsoft and said, what's going to be done with accessibility? And they've just flat out said, we are not doing accessibility in the first revision of this operating system. It's really sad because they're right now, they're out there paying developers to bring their applications over to the Windows Phone 7 platform. You know, why don't you hire an innovative accessibility company to do it too? But no, that's not the point. It's not the money. It's the fact that I don't believe that accessibility is built into that product at all. And if it's done, it's going to be bolted on as usual. And that's just unconscionable as far as I'm concerned. Microsoft's been doing accessibility for a long time, and they should have built in accessibility from the ground up instead of making it an afterthought. It just goes to show how disjointed Microsoft is these days.
We talked about earlier how we as a community need to engage the leaders in our technology industries to make sure that we are heard as a community. And it's very important, I think, that we as a community do the same with Microsoft as well. I mean, many of us, including me, have made investments of well over $1,000 in mobile technology, you know, mobile speak and mobile geo, and you add it up with upgrades and everything with releases. It's very expensive. And for Microsoft to basically ignore the community, which it looks like it's doing, that's very disappointing. I mean, the investment is gone. I'm hoping that there will be a solution for those people who have made that investment and that Code Factory will be able to do something. But we as members of this community need to make sure that we let Microsoft know, hey, this is not cool.
Don't sit back and think, well, other people are going to tell them. I don't really need to do anything. Seriously, if you care about this, don't just sit back and say nothing.
Michael can put up a link to the Microsoft accessibility page and start clicking on that link. Put together a petition. You know, we have friends at Microsoft. As an AT company, sometimes it's very hard to sit here and do what I do because, of course, I want to develop business relations with these companies and as the CEO at Cerotech and say, well, we want this technology to work and that technology to work and how can we participate and what's the business relationship? But as I've stated before, I'm a blind person first and I find Microsoft's attitude about this to be quite flippant and quite frankly, I find it to be very, very arrogant and just a slap in the face. It's dead wrong. Don't get me even started on E3. The hope that I have that there's accessibility in the Xbox stuff. I mean, Microsoft was in on the ground floor of accessibility in this community. They've spent hours and hours and hours talking to all of us, talking to AT companies, talking to consumers, talking to the NFB and the ACB. They've gotten more than an education as to what the needs of blind people are. And for them to just leave us out, it's personal, dude. It's personal.
The thing here is that the conventions are coming and Microsoft's going to be there. So this is a perfect opportunity for the community to go up to Microsoft and say, what are you doing? And if you don't know what you're doing, then you better find out and you better be communicating with the community and telling us what you're going to be doing to resolve these technology issues because it's very important. I mean, we've made major dollar investments in the technology. It's not cheap. It's not like you can go down and buy Navigon for $69. I mean, Mobile Geo's $800.
Even if it was like you could go down and buy Navigon for $69, right?
I know.
How would the mainstream consumer feel? And a lot of mainstream consumers are pretty ticked off about the fact that they went out and bought this HD2 phone. You can look all over the internet and there's people who are pissed about the fact that they bought this HD2 phone that's Windows 6.5 and it's the size of a dinner plate. They bought it for 2 years, dude. You're out of gas. You're not going to get any upgrades. Just for blind folks to understand, it doesn't mean that these phones are going to go off the market tomorrow. Windows Mobile 7 will be available as of late fall, and I'm sure that there will still be many, many, many a Windows Mobile 6.5 phone available out there, but it will be dated technology, and you're only going to be able to find them refurbished, whatever. And Jeff, as you pointed out in one of our conversations, if you have a Windows 6.5 phone and it's on some sort of an insurance plan,
yes, exactly.
You know, and you drop it or lose it, or your buddy throws you in the pool,
like that would ever happen.
Yeah, never. Well, I'm never going to live that down.
Never.
But don't worry, you come over to my house.
As long as I'm old enough to remember it, I'm going to remind you about it. But is Windows Mobile 7 too little too late? You go in a cell phone store. I see iPhones and I see Android devices. I'm not really seeing much Windows Mobile technology lying
around.
Well,
that's a real question. That's beyond the scope of this podcast. Is Microsoft too little too late?
It seems from my vantage point that the only efforts on accessibility are in Windows and Office, whether that be for 508 reasons, whatever government, you know, purchases, whatever the motivation. I just don't see it outside of those realms. Am I off the mark there?
No, I would agree with that.
Right on. The Windows Live Essentials tools are coming. They're coming out in public beta at the end of this month or near the end of this month. It might even be this week. I am very concerned about the level of accessibility, and I have no idea what it is or what it isn't, but I do have a very major concern that we might be in trouble there. You guys will want to keep your finger on that. And
yeah, I'd love to invite Paul Thurrott onto our podcast.
Well, that would be great.
To hear him. Paul has a son who's deaf, and Paul is actually a huge advocate. If you listen to his Windows Weekly podcast over on the Twit Network, he is a real big advocate of accessibility and has applauded a great deal of things that Apple's done with accessibility, if I remember right, being however Windows-centric he is in Microsoft. But I'd love to hear what his views are as that voice of honesty. I think that Microsoft has an advocate in Paul, but they've got a guy who gives them tough love. And I'd love to hear what he says or what he thinks about Microsoft's latest accessibility attitude.
Jeff, why don't you explain for our listeners who maybe don't understand the importance of the Windows Live Essentials and what all that encompasses. Forthcoming video chat capabilities, Windows Messenger.
Yeah. Right now, when you buy Windows 7, you don't get an email program. And so Microsoft is relying on everyone getting this pack called Windows Live Essentials. So it has mail and Messenger, and it has parental control, family safety features, and it has blogging tool called Windows Live Writer. And then there's a number of other applications. Windows Movie Maker is included in it.
Well, they'd prefer you spend $2.99 for Office Pro just so you can have Outlook for email. Anyway.
Yes, of course. Right. So you have all these different applications, and if you type in Windows Live, it comes up on the start menu in Windows 7. It's definitely something that Microsoft wants you to get. And my concern is, and I have nothing to base this on, but my concern is that as they have moved Windows Live Essentials to only work in Vista and Windows 7, they're not going to support the XP environment. Now, the older versions will continue to function, as I understand, but the newer versions will only be for Vista and 7.
IE9 is not going to support XP. I mean, at some point, users of XP will have to make a choice.
No, I understand that, but my point is, does this mean that they're going to start using technologies which will have an impact on current accessibility technology? And if that's the case, then we might be in trouble.
At Sarotech, we're in close contact with the Windows Live people and with the Office people. And no, accessibility is definitely on their list. Unlike the mobile phone area, accessibility is high on the priority list. And when they find a problem, they immediately give us a workaround or tell us when it's going to be fixed. We have an open line to Microsoft when we have a technical support problem like that. I don't think that we have to worry about that for the long term. We may have some problems in the short term.
I would encourage everyone not to jump on the betas of these versions unless you're willing to take a risk. You know, for example, we don't know what JAWS or WindowEyes or whatever access technology you're using, what its current state of using these new versions is going to be. No one has seen them in the wild. We have no idea what their level of accessibility is or is not.
Can we use them, Jeff, and then go back?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I think everyone needs to be really cautious, especially if you use these tools at your job. You really need to be careful that you don't place yourself in a position where, you know, you're kind of stuck. This may all be a moot point. We don't know. We'll know a lot more, you know, when these public beta versions come out and people like me are stupid enough to go ahead and try them.
By and large, I'm pretty pleased with Microsoft's other accessibility. I don't think that the problems, as you said before, are necessarily in Microsoft's executive group. I think it comes down to the individual teams and how important accessibility is to them. Really, when you look at things, and if you look at things from a business standpoint, they got a whole lot bigger problems on their plate than accessibility right now. But that doesn't mean that we need to stop, you know, agitating for change. On the other hand, the iPhone continues to amaze me. The Braille support is just unparalleled by any product on the market. I'm so much looking forward to the iPad update that's going to have the same, and to the new iPod Touches that are going to be out later this year, I'm sure, which will also have Braille support built into them. I mean, we're not going to be left in the dark. We all may become Apple fanboys and girls. There could be worse fates than that. I can't think of one right now, but there could be. The other thing is, though, too, keep putting pressure on us, on the AT companies. Contact us. We are listening. We listen. If you want access to a product, you know, especially at Sarotech, we don't just pull a product out of the air and say, well, we're going to work on that. We actually are very reactive to consumer requests.
So, we're market-driven, as anyone is. You know, if one person asks us, well, think about it, but if there's 5, 10, 20, 50 of you that want something, speak up. Don't assume that just because you want it, we know that you want it.
We haven't built telepathy into our product line just yet, but we're working on it.
Well, I think the important thing to remember out of all of this today is that we as a community need to be engaging everyone where there are issues. And if you're not, shame on you.
Preach it, brother.
How do you advocate, Jeff? Where should the email? I mean, we posted the one for Jonas Klink at Google. That's a starting point. But what about Microsoft? Where should these things be going?
I think you can start at the accessibility page at Microsoft. You can search around for contacts. You can get a hold of companies in the industry that might have contacts that they might be able to help you find out who to speak to. Putting up petitions, some people say that they really don't do a lot of good.
I believe that instead of 300 or 500 or 1,000 signatures on a petition, if even half of those people would send a direct personal email. Explaining why this accessibility is important.
I think the important thing is that the contacts be made publicly available somehow, and that's the hard part. But I think if we can get a group that can get that information out to the community, then we can start letting the Googles and the Microsofts and any other company, Nokia, whoever, make sure they understand that we are an important group.
Or if you don't have a specific contact, do a blog post. And let people tweet and Facebook and refer to that blog post because those are picked up. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Google and Microsoft, believe me, is reading anything with their name in it.
Use Twitter. Post a tweet. Say, hey, who has a good contact at Nokia? Who has a great contact at Microsoft? Who should we be emailing about these issues?
You're raising a great point, Jeff, and that is that gone are the days, unless we want them to continue, of having to go to an NFB or an ACB and say, we got this problem. We want them to do this. And then them rattling their legal swords and saying, we're going to sue them and we're going to this and that. Here, as a consumer, you can take your own future into your own hands and let your voice be heard. Yes, the NFB and ACB's rattling of sabers, legal and otherwise, have made a difference from time to time, but there's nothing better than a consumer's voice to a company, because a consumer's money is the lifeblood of a company, not its accessibility initiative. That's not its lifeblood. It's the money that comes in from consumers that really love its products. I mean, if there's one thing that anybody should come away from this podcast understanding, is we're not a bunch of folks just griping and complaining. We're trying to share not only our hearts, but really what we feel from our professional opinions for all of us on this podcast is going on in the industry. We don't want you to just take this information, put it in your pocket, put it to work, research it, see if we're right. If we're full of crap, then write us and tell us, you know, you guys are full of garbage because of this and this and this. If we're great, then write us and say, hey, you're great. You hit it right on the head. And this is what I'm going to do to make a difference in my part of the community. And let's start banding together. This is a community effort. This is not something that anyone can do by itself. No one can do it in a vacuum. And we want to partner with you, our community, to be able to make our tomorrow better.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com or leave us a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB-2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us in 2 weeks as we explore all the internet and life has to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.